Welcome to Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio, powered by The Barbershop. In this podcast, we'll bring you the latest insights and trends from industry leaders in advertising and marketing. Join us as we dive into discussions that shape the future of our industry.
Hi everyone, good morning and welcome to Adweek. My name's Justin Pearce, I'm the editor of New Digital Age. So we're talking about AI this morning. We were having a pre-chat before upstairs about AI and the goods and bads. And I think one thing that really struck me, as always does when I talk to people in this industry, is that AI in the real world has a very different function and view than AI in our industry. And generally in our industry, it's doing amazing amounts of good. In the real world, not so much. Right, so this morning we've got some real experts on stage. We're going to dig into what it means for advertising, for the consumer experience, and all you in this room. Now, on the screen, you'll see everyone apart from two people, John and Ricky, who very meanly got left off. So I'm going to kick off by letting them have, they have 30 seconds to introduce themselves, who they are, what they do, where they do it, and then we'll go into the discussion. So let's kick off and do that now. John, let's start with you.
Thank you. I'm John Thankamani. I lead our addressable media and commerce capabilities at Dentsu UK. That's pretty much it.
Perfect. And Ricky.
Hi, I'm Ricky Chopra, and I'm the Global AI Task Force lead for Zenith Global, and also an author and writer about AI.
Perfect, thank you. So let's get into it. I think first question is really, will take us the whole 30 minutes, but it's what excites you and what scares you about AI, again, in the frame of our industry. What good's it doing? What are you worried about? And let's just start, Bao, with you.
Yeah, I think speed is probably the biggest thing. Like, AI isn't new. So DB's been, 2008 we were started. We're using machine learning models for our fraud models. Language classification I call true AI. We can't go to a client and go, oh, sorry, we didn't detect it in the terrorism article, so we need to see it 1,000 times, right? You need to analyze it, make our content classification work. So AI has been around for a long time, but recently, the speed at which it's involving all of our work, whether it's external, internal, custom bidding algorithms, we just purchased Scibids, it's just gone through the roof. And not just out of our industry, Justin just asked me now, I'm best man at my mate's wedding on Friday. And he's like, did you get AI to write your speech? So I was like, that is just permeating everywhere so quickly.
But you didn't.
No, I didn't. Because some stuff needs human checks, and I'm sure we'll come on to that in a sec. But yeah, I would not rely on AI. I'm way funnier than AI.
Look, Sarah, let's get your thoughts. We won't have everyone's thoughts on every question, but let's kick off. But what's exciting you about AI?
I think there's a few things. First is being able to bring consumers into the creative process. So we've launched a number of campaigns, one of them recently with Perfetti, where we had kids create their fantasy lollipop world. And then those images were then used in social campaigns. And it was so amazing and empowering to see the consumers brought into the creative process and into the media. So I think augmenting human creativity. I think time, I sit on a number of our client task forces and, I'm hearing numbers like we're getting 10 hours back for our teams. And our teams are being more proactive in how they think about ideation, how they think about optimization, all of these different things. So getting time back, because to me, I feel like it's just got busier and busier and busier. And to be able to have more time to create and to think and to do what it is that we love about our industry is really exciting. Sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, picking up on this, on the time saving, Ricky, you and I were chatting earlier this morning. I think what's fascinating to me is that AI is going to bring in new job roles, and was told to our industry. So that's a positive thing. It's not going to be kicking people out of jobs. But then at the same time, Sarah's saying gives you time back. And Ricky, you were saying this morning, AI lets you do yourself what used to take 10 people a week. So what's the friction here in terms of what it can do for our industry? Do you, Ricky?
It's one of those that we've got to work through. But for me, AI is opening up opportunities and it's allowing us to do more with the same number of people. So, for example, traditionally there have been business questions that it's been very difficult and expensive to answer. But with AI, people like myself who don't can't write SQL or Python, are able now to answer these business questions with the aid of AI and AI tools. So that's kind of like where I see this going. I see that, you know, basically it's going to allow more people to have, well, it's going to democratize business intelligence and enable us to answer more business questions, and in a time frame that actually the clients, you know, actually can do something about it in near real time, as opposed to waiting for 6 months after a campaign and doing an MMM or econometric study. We're able to do them in near real time using AI technology and AI tools.
John, what are you seeing as positive? I mean, democratization's good, but also it can be sort of comes under negative. And time saving's good, but then, you know, it can be sometimes seen as a negative in procurement sites, for example. So what are you seeing as some of the immediate positive impacts of AI?
Negative is, I think the content piece is very tough to get off. When you think about just the content that's being produced by AI, or we've talked about like MFA and other things like that, there's a lot that's happening in the space, which is really scary. I think campaign this week, there was an article around the WPP incident itself, right? There's a lot happening that's very close to us. I think there's a place for trusted environments. So there's three ways I look at controls. So one is trusted environments. So whether you believe in that or not, broadly, there are environments that people trust. Let's say certain platforms, they trust platforms because they are what they are, whether it's Google or let's say Meta or like the BBC or the Guardian. It's because you trust it. There's a certain level of trust and legacy in the platform. Even if the content they're on might be misleading and not so true. So there's a big place for the right platforms, the right trust around that. There's the content itself around how we actually fix it, manage it. And then the tools. So there's a ton, there's tons of tools within media, but otherwise as well, to just keep on top of like misinformation, etc. So that's where I think AI can definitely lean in. So we're seeing a lot of instances where you can see AI being used to build out negative content, but we can also see it for like fact checks and stuff like that. I think the next few years will really allow us to see how this tips out. But in that space, I think it's really critical.
Can I just jump in as well? I used to work for a premium publisher, and I think one of the risks we've got at the moment is there's a big difference between a premium news brand who has a journalist who's checking their facts, has their sources, has drafted copy, and they're using AI to speed up the editorial content, right? We need more good quality media out there. Big difference between that and some clickbait trash, which is we've got an automated sort of headline, automated content. It's just spouting out anything, probably misinformation. That's the stuff we need to avoid, and not the good quality stuff. And I think there's a risk from clients at the moment who are going, anything written by AI, don't want to touch it. Okay. That's not the approach to go for. And that's why us at DB, we have high, medium, low risk tiers to sort of allow that flexibility. So I think that's something that's really important as well.
Interesting point you made, that some clients say, don't get into AI. Sean, we were talking before this morning again, we talked a lot about sort of what clients' view of an AI is, because obviously it can do great, amazing work to help you and your teams do better work for the client, but then the clients aren't fully brought on board. As Bao was saying, there can be some nervousness around AI-developed content, etc. So what are you seeing in terms of clients' appetite for AI generally?
I think with all new technology, you see a real spectrum of client kind of appetite for it. And we're seeing some clients who are just really leaning in and really pushing us hard to develop new capabilities and to use them on their campaigns. And we've got other clients who are very clear that they don't want even the most basic machine learning algorithms used to optimize any of their digital media campaigns. And there's a whole raft of people kind of in the middle. It's classic bell curve. The top 5% are pushing really, really hard, but the bottom 5% are never going to look at this stuff and probably won't even in a couple of years. So it's a real mix. And that presents us some quite interesting challenges, because we want to be able to cater, because we're a big multinational organization, want to be able to cater for all clients of all different sizes and all different kind of policies and appetite for different technologies. So we have to balance what we can do across that spectrum.
I mean, one of the things on the client perspective, I can't imagine a day where a client will tolerate an excuse like the machine did it. Mm-hmm. I'm a firm believer that clients are always going to expect us people to be having editorial control over the content that we're pushing out, the media that we're pushing out, the decisions that we're making. So I think it's people augmented with technology is the solution, not replacing people with technology. So that's sort of my viewpoint. I might be a bit rose-colored spectacles on that one, but there we go.
So what do you think in that frame in terms of, you know, people augmenting technology and going against the headlines of the robots taking our jobs, that sort of thing? How are you seeing AI change the job roles and the functions of people in your teams, for example?
I mean, I like to think of it as an assistant. You know, it kind of gives you a head start. But I think it really depends on the client and the roles that sit within that client. So, you know, the things that we're starting to see more of is innovation happening quicker because we can prototype super quickly. We're starting to see, you know, as I said, more time to be able to create. So we're having more people spend time in those creation and strategic roles, utilizing AI tools. So I would say it's just, as I kind of mentioned before, it's just giving people more time. And I think that's starting to shift some of those job roles. But all of our teams now have access to tools, now have access to all of the technology. And so every single person in our organization is expected to be able to interact and utilize those tools. So I think at this early kind of stage that we're at, people are still learning. They're still testing and learning. I think over the next year, we'll probably see what that evolution looks like a lot more.
John, what do you see in terms of how AI is reshaping your teams and I guess the teams across the wider agency?
So I think there's a ton of different levels of impact because broadly, the technology is starting to be applied in different places, whether it's within our organization, whether it's within partners and things like that. For example, across Dentsu, we've partnered with like Microsoft to just get everyone an instance to Copilot so everyone can use it. So that's 70,000 people enabled with that. How everyone uses it is very different. Some people are like automating a lot of their process, looking at how they can streamline things, etc. I think within the industry itself, there are other conversations which I think will accelerate. So across what we cover, so if you think of addressability in general, so since about 2017, there's a lot of focus on privacy itself. So there's obviously the cookie change, which is coming up as well. So in terms of the lack of signals when it comes to addressability, so most platforms and providers in the space have started moving towards modeled information, modeled cohorts. It's starting to work really well. So whether you think of it as Advantage Plus post the Apple signal loss, they went down in stock. The stock is back now massively. Meta is like rising like crazy. And we can see that partners don't need personal information in the way that you needed earlier. And I think AI will only accelerate that further, right? So in terms of how our teams are looking at it, I think everyone needs to understand how to have that conversation of what's being enabled. Is it a workflow solution? Is it a targeting solution? Is it a measurement solution? How can you actually use it? Because technically, if you think of it 2 years ago, there were about like 60,000 AI specialists in the world. So there's actually not a lot of people who actually know what's truly happening. But we all know broadly, conceptually, what we need to do and get out of it. And that's what we're trying to focus on.
Okay, let's talk a bit about what AI is doing in terms of helping clients manage media spend, media allocation, and there's big issues like brand safety, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So what are the biggest themes we're seeing now, especially as AI's really taken hold? What are we going to see this year, Bauer?
Yeah, so for us, what we've seen is, and kind of touching what everybody's just said here, is how are the teams going to retrain and what is their role going to be? So we're working with one of Ricky's clients, using traditional KPIs with our custom bidding algo solution, and we've seen an improvement in performance of 22%. Right, which is huge. Mm. So the machines, in terms of optimizing towards a KPI, are way ahead. What the teams need to do, from what I can see, is the signals that are putting in to optimize, we need to be very careful about. Yeah. So like YouTube's one huge area that I optimize towards BTR or cost per complete view, because that's what we've traditionally used. However, what we see is a load of kids signals coming through. So Minecraft videos, kids are obsessed with Minecraft, right?
Yeah.
So I've seen it at lunch when I'm with my mates' kids. They give the phone, give it to the kid. that's counted as a view.
Or was that you now?
Yeah. I was looking at my graphic editor. Right? But look, those are hitting stats. The algorithm's going to optimize towards that. Mm. But that's not selling products. That's not driving business outcomes. So that's where we need to be really careful about that. What I think is great about the future, though, what's really exciting is moving away from those traditional KPIs that can be gamed. Mm. So, for example, like this is stuff you can do today. Working with retail media networks, we can look at offline sales and online sales. We can actually optimize towards sales or towards brand lift, right? And don't think of a KPI as attention or viewability or cost or reach or whatever. Put all that data into the algorithm. Let it decide what the best blend is. And instead on a plan, you're not going to have, I'm thinking a few years' time, you won't have an ACPM or a VCPM or whatever. It will be increasing sales, increasing brand uplift. And I think that's a really exciting part of what it can bring.
Ricky, you're nodding quite a lot there. And this thing, media plan moving to increasing sales, which seems like everyone's dream.
Yeah.
Signals change. How's AI impacting that?
Signals are changing. Again, so one of the things that the applications that we're seeing for AI is pattern recognition and identifying patterns that we just probably haven't seen, to Bal's point. Okay, you know, that traditionally we're saying that these are the primary KPIs and we've got to optimize towards these KPIs. But I kind of like to, well, a long time in this industry, and I still believe that we don't really know what's going on. You know, we're basing our knowledge on half truths and partial facts. But I think the exciting thing about AI is that it really does start opening up and enabling us to actually identify these patterns and really see what the drivers are, you know, really be able to correlate what is driving sales performance. And I do agree that media planning needs to change. It needs to be outcomes based, you know. So again, we have been producing media plans to a CPM or to a VCPM or an attentive view or whatever it may be. But I think we need to be, you know, like striving to a place where AI is enabling us to actually predict outcomes, you know, to actually understand the business impact of this plan and our decisions. And again, you know, in Zenith, what we're doing is we're developing an AI co-planner that actually is able to analyze the data as you're planning and give us, you know, sort of in effect, give us recommendations and suggestions. Again, I'm a firm believer that I want the people to make the decisions. I don't want it to be fully automated. So again, you know, we're leveraging AI. So the AI provides us with recommendations and ranks, you know, according to the impact that it thinks it might have, tactic might have, it ranks them. And so we're able to then make the decision and have the conversation with our clients. We're thinking of doing this, radically changing that, moving investment from here to here. So I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, it does. So
can I just add to that, just on that point, extending it? I think it's if you think of just the last 20 years itself, like we started off with just media planning with offline data, you had insight and you planned on that. And then we moved into addressable information, which we've got lots of. You can think of any platform. And if there's anyone who's worked with the insider platform, I started off as a trader, right? So you had like generated tons of different reports, looking at the week of the day, this, that, all these factors, and just working out how to get the most out of your media. And I think where we're moving to, and this is probably in the next 2-3 years, we're seeing partnerships with things like Cybit, etc. You've got all of that data, and we need to equip our staff, our talent, to essentially make decisions and be able to connect that data into ways that can actually make better media decisions. So I think one of the interesting things is just making offline data more addressable and not in a personal way, but like if you've got business sales data across the UK by, like, let's just take Tesco, right? You know broadly where your Tesco, the giant stores are, where the Tesco Expresses are, etc. So you've got like an optimization layer of where you want to increase sales, where you want to drive better awareness, where you have competition, etc. Where there's a mix of like digital, online versus offline. And at this point, we're doing a lot of planning, which is fairly manual, and then figuring out ways to connect. And if you think of it 20 years prior, we had to do it really manually, measure it in intervals, and we're getting closer and closer to a point where we can make better decisions. But the people have to be involved to actually know what's the good media and also how much can you sell, what's other factors in the when it comes to surround factors, etc., right, in terms of the decisions to be made itself. But I think augmenting what people can do is what's happening at the moment.
So what are your thoughts on all that? I mean, better media decisions, redefining KPIs, all this sort of great stuff, I guess, is going to make what you do for clients just more valuable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think across the entire purchase journey, it's helping us think differently as well. So one of the things that we've started to really focus on is tools like conversational AI. You know, we often will have a brief come in, a media brief come in, and we'll go back and say, actually, we don't think that media is the solution to this. We think that the problem comes further down the funnel. So we've recently launched a project for a government client where the actual solution ended up being a conversational AI. And the predictions on media were so low comparatively to what we could deliver in the conversational AI. And I think actually what it's also helping us do is to look at what our new innovation pilot test and learn solutions might be in this space as well. But yeah, ultimately, I think all of these tools are helping us speed up our decisions and make us become more efficient. But actually going back and challenging some of those assumptions is still down to us.
Just add on that as well, that you're right, that efficiency in terms of conversational AI. We did a hack AI at DB. It sounds as geeky as it is, but we split up like sales engineers, salespeople, and we had a few people from each team. We were challenged to come up with ideas how to drive performance. And conversational AI and generative AI is such a good way of speeding things up. So an example is the AMs, a third of their time was spent just sending literally like standard emails, which they know how to send. They can do that automatically with a chat AI. I do think we need to be careful and not put everything into a box. For example, like human insights, being able to actually manually work out general insights for your clients, which they can action, that for now is a human thing. If you try and put that in a chat bot, it's going to be a nightmare, right? So I think we need to be careful with how much we shift to AI and how much we keep the humans as well.
Like the wedding speech. There's no countdown clock, so I'm going to go on for another hour, I think. So, finished. So let's just note someone to take to me. But let's get all of you really some kind of advice for the audience on what AI tools have you found interesting? What AI tools are you using? What should people leave here today and go and look into? And Sean, start with you.
So I think the biggest advice I'd give right now is to don't just default to the free versions of the chatbots that are available. Those free versions are built on technology that is 4 years old now. The knowledge in them is up till the end of 2022. And quite frankly...
Is that across the board?
Across the board. I think the more recent ones from Google and Anthropic, so Gemini and Claude 3, the free versions are better. But I don't think anyone will get the impression they should get from this technology by using the free versions, because the paid versions are so much better than the free versions. So I know it's expense, but for £20 a month, it's worth, I think, doing that to get the experience of what the kind of cutting edge technology is capable of now. Having said that, though, OpenAI yesterday announced their latest version. It's going to be freely available to everyone. So my advice is go to ChatGPT and use the latest model, because that is the most sophisticated model that we have at the moment. So try that out.
Great. Ricky, same to you. What's advice? What should people do after this?
Well, for me personally, I think the biggest advancement is in, you know, using AI for BI, business intelligence. You know, and again, as I said, it's democratizing business intelligence. Traditionally, what has been only capable by a small team of people who are very skilled and specialists. You know, technology like Accio is opening up to everybody, you know. So again, using natural language, I can go and, you know, get business questions or answers to business questions that traditionally somebody like me wouldn't have been able to get without a team of people. So for me, that's a real game changer, and something that I think, you know, if you're in media, you should definitely be exploring.
John, same to you. What's your advice for what tools people look at?
Slightly different advice. I think more than tools, I think it's bringing everyone along on the journey, because I think one of the things that we are trying to just get across the board is just making sure everyone has the same level of comfort when it comes to using base level tools, and when it comes to using systems. So it could be training across the board, launching products across the board, because there's tons of products and we've got different levels of adoptions. Like we have team members and with, like I myself use only AI primarily from a tool like note-taking perspective. I use Notion, but there's a ton of usage across the spectrum. So working out where it's really valuable, I think, and getting everyone on that journey is critical.
Fantastic. And again, I'm without a countdown clock. I think we've got a minute left. We started 2 minutes late, so I'll keep going until then. And get two more bits of advice from our last two panelists. Sarah, what should people be doing after this? Where should they go looking?
I think there are a multiple of tools and I would try them all. We obviously utilize all the tools within WPP Open, which means we experiment with all the different ones. I actually got a really great piece of advice from my nine-year-old son, which was, so they're, he's building a drinks brand using generative AI to create all of the prototyping. And he was saying to me, oh, but everything's going to look the same with AI, mum. So we use different tools. So they use Stable Diffusion, a bit of Mid Journey. You know, they're pulling all of these different things in because they want to show up with different. So I think experiment and you'll show up with difference. And that would be my advice.
Great advice. Bao, lastly, what should people do after this?
So I would say get under the bonnet of what the company does. Right. So I got an email this morning. I was like, this is perfect. I'm going to get this in. So my dog, I love my dog. He's Cover. He's a lovely staffy, 18 months. And I have a little camera so I can fire treats at him. And I got an email and it actually said, subscribe to our AI technology to make sure he's safer at home when you're not there. So it times when to fire treats at him. And I was like, what the hell? Everyone is claiming they're doing AI, but they're not. That's not AI, right? However, what I'm trying to say, the serious point is there's a lot of companies out there claiming they do AI, but it's just someone writing a script and they'll update it once a day. That's not true AI. True AI is someone who looks at a program that looks at data, analyzes it, comes up with its own conclusions, updates its models multiple times a day. That's those sort of companies are the ones that are going to last. The ones that are claiming to be AI, do your work and yeah.
Or stop claiming if you're one.
Or stop claiming if you're doing it.
Well, I think we're up against time, so thank you so much. Amazing panelists, lots of good advice. I hope you all enjoyed it and you can come and join the panelists after. So thank you all so much.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Advertising Week Europe 2024 in audio. Stay connected with us on social media using the handle @AdvertisingWeek and visit our website, europe.advertisingweek.com, for more exclusive content. This podcast was produced by Podcanda, the audio conference solution.